This is where the DJ talks. Don't say anything.
Okay.
Each of these media creates a new environment. It creates a new situation for human association and human perception. Any medium at all creates a new pattern, a new atmosphere, a new environment of human perception, which works upon the whole man. It works upon the whole society. That is the effect of a medium. It has that total pervasive effect. That is the message, that social change that is brought about. The content of the medium is never the message, because the content is always the old medium.
From the vast wilds of the Great White North for the week of September the 25th, 2017, it's TVA, a Canadian perspective on television from north and south of the 49th parallel. I'm Anthony Marco.
And I'm Greg David.
We would like you to put your television on mute for episode 235 of TVA, the podcast. Greg, the fall has kicked in. The fall season, when everything is supposed to start, and that's how I remember it when I grew up.
Yeah, same with me. Now, granted, here in southern Ontario, it's hot as the surface of the sun, so it definitely does not feel like fall. But yeah, if you look at the calendar, this is the time when the American programming is hitting the airwaves, and also here in Canada, it started actually last week, but now is really kind of hit its stride in the next few weeks. So the fall is the most wonderful time of the year when it comes to television.
We are in Miami-like weather.
It's gross. It's really gross.
Like 33 degrees Celsius, which is somewhere in the neighborhood of about, like, I would say, what, 86-ish? Actually, more than that. It's probably like up closer to 90.
Yeah, I think so.
And with the humidity, the Humidex, it's up over, like, in the high 90s or 100 or something. Yeah. It's pretty disgusting.
Yeah, if you don't have air conditioning, I feel sorry for you.
And it's fall. So there you go. So I will say that I just watched the first couple episodes of the new Star Trek show on Crave.
I did too. What did you think?
It's okay.
Yep.
With any Star Trek show, it's going to be about character development. And yes. So I like the characters so far, but as to how they develop them, that will be the hallmark of the show, right? I think that even going back and watching old Star Trek series, if you go back and you watch old episodes or an old series run through or something like that, it's the characters that you go back and you, even if you're watching the early episodes, you're thinking about them from the perspective of what you end up knowing about them.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, I've read that some people thought that the first two episodes were pretty clunky. And as we know, setting up that world in the first episode or two, it's always tough, even more so in a sci-fi series like Star Trek. And then you add in just, you know, the decades and decades of source material that are already there. So, of course, it's going to be judged out like that.
The first episode of, like, Next Generation was brutal.
Yeah, that's legendarily brutal.
Yes.
So I liked it. I liked the sci-fi effects. You know, it just goes to show you how the technology has come forward and everything now looks like a feature film. It keeps throwing me off, though, that our lead heroine's first name is Mike, and that's kind of screwing me up a little bit. They've kind of established a big bad over the during the first two episodes. So I'm kind of all in on this stuff already, and I was pretty excited. You know, the opening credits start, which I really like the animation for the credits every week, and they throw in the theme music every once in a while. So, yeah, I really like it so far.
It's very much done. So, I mean, it's being done by, being produced by, it was CBS Streaming or Interactive.
CBS
Access. And I will say, it looks kind of like a Netflix style show, like a web-based style show, as opposed to a traditional TV network show.
Yeah, good point. I totally agree.
Yeah, style-wise, anyway. In terms of, it seems like, even though it's an expansive storyline, everything seems a bit tighter and smaller.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, I like it, and again, you already mentioned it, but if you live here in Canada, there are two ways to watch it, Star Trek Discovery. One is if you pay a little extra to get Space, or the other is to pay a little extra to get Crave TV, and since we get Crave TV, new episodes will be dropping every Monday night at 8, I think it is.
Crave TV is worth it alone if you have never watched any of the old HBO shows that you've heard so much about.
Or Star Trek. They've got
or
the
Star
whole
Trek, Star- or Doctor Who's, you know.
Yeah, if you're a sci-fi fan, Crave TV is definitely the place to go.
Yeah, and even The Wire, The Sopranos, like all those old HBO shows are on there.
For sure, yep.
So that wasn't really too much Canadian content other than it's Crave. I mean, you know.
Yeah, they're a broadcaster here in this country. Yeah,
exactly. It's worth talking about, I suppose.
Listen, you can't ignore some of the stuff that happens down in the U.S. as much as we try to. Like, listen, exactly. we're not going to talk about young Sheldon, but we can definitely talk about Star Trek Discovery.
We have another chock-full calendar. Actually, it's chock-full for this week.
It's chock-a-block.
For next week, not so much. It kind of eases up a bit for next week.
Okay. Yeah, but if you remember, though, all of the, you know, your PVR is going to be doing some heavy lifting, though. Now, if you you know, if you're recording all of these shows and trying to watch them all.
Now, so before we get into the calendar, it's time for the beverage update. And Greg, I already kind of told you I'm not in for an alcoholic beverage this week, so I don't know. I don't know quite how I'm going to Sam Elliott this thing, but I'll let you go first and let us know what you're drinking.
Okay, well, right now I'm not drinking anything, but later, because the weather is so hot, I'm definitely going to be having a ice-cold Mill Street organic beer. It's already in the fridge and waiting for me, so that's what I'll be having. It's light, it's crisp, and it's really refreshing. And there you go. What are you going to be drinking?
I am drinking... Kirkland Signature Diet Green Tea.
Oh.
So ever since I was in for the bariatric surgery, I'm not supposed to drink anything carbonated. And so I used to be a complete Diet Coke drinker. And so I'm avoiding all... So I'm looking for basically diet beverages, because I don't need the extra sugar, looking for diet beverages that are non-carbonated.
Yeah.
And what I found is at Costco,
yeah,
which I haven't had a membership at, because Kirkland is the Costco brand.
Yes.
Or they just can't call it Costco. I don't know. It's
I don't know.
You know, it's like, you know. Anyway, they had like a 35-pack of these 500-mil bottles, like back near where the water was. And it's like diet green tea. It's like basically like an iced tea that's calorie-free. And I think it's like $7.99 for like 35 of them or something like that.
Of course it is.
Of course it is. And then you get a truck with it to haul it off yourself.
When I had a Costco membership, I don't know about you, but I would always go and then I would always walk out somehow with like $100 worth of stuff every time.
I can't walk. I wish I could walk out of there with $100 worth of stuff. I don't think I've ever walked out of there with less than $300.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We got a family of seven here.
Right.
Greg.
Plus you're stocking that the fallout shelter.
Yes, exactly. So that's what I'm drinking. And I don't know that there's anything that Sam Elliott can say about diet green tea, to be honest with you. I think that would be disingenuous.
I think so, too.
Yeah. So there you go. There's the beverage update. That takes us into the calendar. I don't know if we talked about, because you might have done an update after the last episode. I don't think we talked about Flower Power, which was back on the 22nd. I'm not sure if we talked about that.
We did.
Oh, did we? Okay.
Yeah, we briefly mentioned it. Yes.
We grazed over it. We dusted over it.
Yeah, there was a light dusting of flour. You know what? Now that you say that, I don't think we did talk about it.
I don't think we did either. Yeah. I would have remembered that name. So.
Yeah, I think it came out.
So last Friday on the Gusto Network,
the
debut of Flower Power, which I'm guessing is some kind of baking show.
It definitely is. I'm just calling up the information right now.
Some kind of Italian baking thing.
Because I had totally forgotten all about it.
Yes.
So
well,
it is. Oh, this looks good. This is. Let me read the description. It is a fun, stylish, and playful series that is all about sharing the love and joy of baking. Step back in time with our lovely host, Jessica McGovern, and her retro-inspired kitchen. A sophisticated woman of many talents, Jessica's expertise and warm persona inspires us to bake at home. So she's baking up three delightful desserts in each episode. Whether you need a simple, delicious treat for your children's... It's baking. It's baking for every occasion.
There you go. So that was back on Friday the 22nd, but I'm assuming that its regular time will probably be Fridays on Gusto.
Yes, sir.
We did mention last time the return this past Sunday of Heartland and the Nature of Things. This past Monday, which was yesterday, we had the debut of Alias Grace, which has been getting a lot of hoopla and fanfare,
ooh,
especially after the success of during the Emmy Awards of The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah, riding on the definitely on the coattails of The Handmaid's Tale, but also CBC showed the first episode of Alias Grace at TIFF. So kind of, you know, giving the spotlight to a television show in the middle of TIFF and, you know, doing
right.
And they were really smart to do that because it got a lot of press. They also had the cast. They had Sarah Pauly, who adapted the book to the 6-part miniseries, available for interviews, as well as Margaret Atwood. So, yeah, it debuted on CBC, the first of 6 parts. If you forgot, you can go to cbc.ca and watch it there. Waiting to find out what the ratings were. I'm expecting the ratings for Monday night CBC is going to be very strong, because in addition to Alias Grace, we had the season 11 return of Murdoch Mysteries. So that's a big night for CBC.
So Alias Grace miniseries, has there been any indication yet that if it's successful, we're going to create this world into a series?
No, because it's contained just within the book, the 6-part miniseries.
Right, but you could always leave a cliffhanger somewhere there, couldn't you?
Have you read the book?
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, it's not left open for interpretation.
The world of Alias Grace. Alias Grace 2, the Metal Storm, the return of Jared Sin. No?
No.
Okay.
I think though what we will see, and this is part of CBC's mandate, of course, is to adapt more Canadian literature to miniseries and TV movie projects. So obviously, I think on the strength of Alias Grace, they're probably going to just do more, you know, more literature and, you know, maybe more specifically Margaret Atwood stuff.
Okay. Which kind of makes sense. I mean, you might as if you've got a formula and it's working and you've got some talented people, notable people, especially like Sarah Pauly, who are willing to take that on and take the next steps with it, why wouldn't you, right?
Yeah, it took her close to 8 years to adapt it. She bought the rights and initially thought that she was going to make it into a feature film. And then the storytelling, there were a lot of flashbacks back and forth, and she realized how confusing that was going to be to try and squeeze it into a 2-hour movie. So a 6-hour miniseries definitely makes more sense. And I've seen the first 2 episodes, and it's really good.
I'm starting to really hate flashbacks, by the way.
Well, I do too. Done well, they can be very effective. You know, if you think back to Lost, I think was really the TV show that did it very, very well most recently, or at least in my recent memory. But you're right. If you're constantly flashing back, you know, getting back to Discovery, there were a couple of flashbacks to tell Michael's backstory. And if they're done badly, it can be really jarring and really mess up your TV experience.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, the return of Murdoch Mysteries was on the 25th as well, season 11.
Yes.
Which puts it in one of the longer running Canadian dramas probably on the air, and it's been split between a couple different networks as well, right?
Yeah, that's right. And the latest news to come out of Murdoch Mysteries is that they're actually flying, some of the cast and crew are going to be flying out to Victoria, BC in the next week, because they're going to be filming for several days there as part of the 2-hour Christmas movie that's going to be coming out in December. I know Peter Mitchell, the showrunner, told me that William Murdoch and Julie Ogden, their storyline is going to take them out to Victoria, kind of a Christmas vacation vibe, and then they'll, while they're on vacation out in Victoria, there will be a murder that needs to be solved back in Toronto. So, 2-hour Christmas movie.
Wow. So, which they can then show every Christmas from now on, is what you're saying.
That's right, and put on DVD. Yes. This will be the third one, the third Murdoch Mysteries holiday movie.
Tuesday the 26th is CBC's banner day. It is the return of a lot of long-standing series, and one that surprisingly is doing its victory lap, let's say. So we have the return on the 26th of... I don't know if this is the order they're going in. It could be.
It is.
It would make sense. Yeah, so this is the order they're going. So Rick Mercer returns, you know, people have been watching, a lot of people call it Canada's answer to The Daily Show that isn't quite daily.
Right.
And isn't even quite weekly most of the
no.
year. Also, This Hour is 22 Minutes, or is it now just called 22 Minutes, I think?
Yes.
Yes. Kim's Convenience and Mr. D all return on the 26th.
Yeah, this is, you know, looking at that lineup, you know that there's no surprise this is CBC's comedy night. And we're going to get a little bit into this later, but as you already kind of teased, this is going to be the last season of Rick Mercer Report. 22 Minutes continues, Kim's Convenience. This is season 2. The showrunners and everybody involved in the show say actually that kind of riding the wave of the Canadian Screen Awards that they got and the success that the original play got in Broadway this past summer, they're going into season 2 and the scripts are funnier than they were before. I've seen the first episode, and I can say that the first episode was very, very funny. I don't know about the rest of the season, but I'm expecting big things from them. And also, Mr. D is back, and I think this is season 7 of Mr. D.
It's 6 or 7,
yeah.
Never been a fan.
I know, you know, people are...
I'm not one of these people who says it's the worst show ever, no. But I mean, it's never caught on with me, and it could be because I think I watched the first couple episodes, and it really... Even though I've heard some people say, oh my God, that's just what it's like to be a teacher. As a teacher, I can tell you, no, it's not.
Yeah. I mean, basically, you're either in one of two camps. You either watch the show and love it, or you don't watch the show at all. Again, saw the first episode of this season. And what's interesting is that it seems as though the show is morphing into kind of, they're throwing some musical numbers and a little bit more, some kind of bigger picture kind of comedy. Right. Comedy segments or comedy scenes as opposed to kind of the short rat-a-tat-tat of jokes, which has been interesting to see how the show has evolved a little bit over the last couple of seasons. But so Mercer's on at 8, and then we go right through to Mr. D at 9:30 on Tuesday nights.
There you go. We jump down to Thursday, which is the 28th, and we have the return of the venerable Dragon's Den.
Yeah.
And I don't know who the hell are the dragons these days. I have no idea.
You know, funny you should ask me that question because I happen to have the list right here, Anthony. Because the big news in season 12 of Dragon's Den is the fact that Arlene Dickinson is back on the show.
Say it ain't so, Greg.
I had an interview with her yesterday. It was very interesting to talk to her about coming back to the program. And essentially, she had left the program several years ago because she wanted to start up her own company. She'd been inspired by helping out entrepreneurs, Canadian entrepreneurs, on Dragon's Den. So she went off and started up her own company to help entrepreneurs called District Ventures. And now she's back on
Catchy.
Now she's back on the Dragon's Den. So she joins Jim Treliving, Joe Mimran. Now, Jim is from Boston Pizza. Joe Mimran is from Joe Fresh. Manjeet Minas, she's a beer. Her company owns and distributes beer. Michael Weckerly, who's kind of a jack-of-all-trades investor. He would grab headlines in the last year because he saved the Elma Combo from being from being gutted. So he's actually in the season premiere wearing an Elma Combo t-shirt. And Michelle Romano, who owns her own company and deals largely with promotion and online, kind of the online world. So if you'll notice by going through those names, that means that this season, for the first time, we've got 3 men and 3 women. So not only has the Dragon's Den never had this many dragons before, but now it's split between three guys and 3 gals. And, you know...
I wonder, now, are they all on every episode, yes. Or did they do that so they could rotate on and off?
No, all 6 of them are there.
Okay. Of course, Boston Pizza being a Canadian franchise.
Yes.
I'd like to say that it was named after the band and not the city, but I don't think that's the case.
No, do you know the story? Do you care to know the story?
Sure, tell me the story,
okay,
Greg.
So Jim was an RCMP officer, and I believe it was in Edmonton where he came across this local pizza joint that was called Boston Pizza, and he bought the franchise. When he retired, he bought the store from the owners, and it grew from there.
So
it was originally named Boston Pizza. He had not named it that.
So you're saying he had more than a feeling about it?
More than a feeling. Yes. Oh, jeez.
It's been such a long time since we've used that joke. But don't look back. We're moving forward.
Amanda.
Indeed. jumping to Saturday the 30th, we have the season finale of The Filmmakers.
On Yom Kippur. Which is
a CBC's show about filmmakers.
Yeah, they have Canadian...
Basically, the filmmakers that they could get interviews with, they're on... That's what the show's about.
Exactly. Talk about the film that the person made, and then they broadcast the film.
Right. So, there you go. The only other calendar item we have for basically all of next week on... technically, is Sunday on October 1st, which is the debut of The Disappearance.
Yes, this is CTV's 6-part television event miniseries, and it's all about a boy that goes missing and the family that will do anything to try and get him back. This was shot in and around Montreal. I did a set visit. Spoke to stars Peter Coyote.
Oh, there you go.
Peter Coyote.
Who is, who's being noted right now for doing a lot of the narration on the Ken Burns Vietnam War
documentary.
Documentary.
Yeah, it's like 18 hours. I've watched the first hour and a half, and it's very, very good. I love Ken Burns. I know that, you know, some people criticize him for being a little bit slow and methodical, but you know, I don't mind that.
I love the fact that in terms of documentary making, they named an entire style after him, which was getting a documentary photo and panning.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they call it the Ken Burns effect.
Effect,
and I remember that because on my Macs, on our Macs at one point, that was a slideshow theme. You called it that.
Yeah. Well, and they also had Microsoft for a long while had a program, and you might still be able to find it online. They don't put it out very much. It was called Photo Story.
Okay.
And so you could dump a bunch of photos into it, and then you created a video by, you could actually tell it, pan from this part of the screen over to this part of the screen over a span of 17 seconds or something like
that. Wow.
So, which is cool. I mean, he actually did that and then, you know, put the voices into it and all that stuff. And like, I remember I watched the entire baseball documentary, the jazz documentary that he did was great. I never really was into the Civil War one all that much.
Yeah, you know what? I felt exactly the same way about the Civil War one. I tried to watch it.
Well, I mean, it's very much don't get me wrong. I'm not saying a Canadian can't be interested in the Civil War, but I mean, but I would have been more interested in Canadian history than I would have been in the U.S. piece. So, and he's not going to be doing that anytime soon.
So just a couple of names attached to this. Peter Coyote, also Aidan Young, who most recently of Rectify, a very good show. He's a Canadian actor. And Camille Sullivan, who's a Canadian actress. So, check out The Disappearance.
Indeed. So, beyond that, we have... we already mentioned Rick Mercer. The debut season premiere is on is on tonight as we're recording here, and it was just announced I think yesterday, if not over the weekend, that it's the final season of Rick Mercer, and it sounds like he's essentially going out on his own terms, because CBC at this point would probably get stoned if they canceled.
You're right. The announcement was made yesterday. They published one of his rants, his famous rants, and he announced that this is the 15th and final season. It's 22 episodes, excuse me, and this show has been on the air, if you do the math, since 2014. So after this season wraps up, that's going to be 277...
2004,
excuse me, I'm sorry, I was reading ahead to the fact that there's going to be 277 episodes of the show that have aired since its debut.
Which, the only thing that I've ever had a problem with the show... is that I really have felt that over the years it should have been a weekly show. And I mean weekly throughout the entire year.
No summer break.
They should have given the budget to it. If they had to have guest hosts in or take, you know, a month off here or there to do that. But they should have really put the budget in. Because I think this is kind of an essential satire show that every country needs to have. And to let it drop out for an entire half of a year, if not longer, each season is... It loses momentum and it misses so much opportunity.
I think you're right. And obviously that's the same with a lot of television shows that are based on satire and the news. You know, Saturday Night Live is getting into doing the whole, you know, there's a few weeks in August where they do the summer specials. But you're right. It's weird how, like, these shows are so timely and rely on that timeliness that, you know, once there's that lag. Like, you really can't watch these shows after the fact, you know? Like, they just look so dated.
Yeah. It's tough. I mean, there are some bits that you can watch, but to watch an entire episode, even a year or two out, is just
when you see repeats of Rick Mercer and he's making fun of the Harper government, you're like, wow, okay, I know this is a really old episode.
You know, you hear him say Preston Manning, and it's like, what the
Johnny McDonald? So final season, Mercer's going to be, he goes to Sea Cadet National Regatta in Kingston, a shipwreck in Nunavut, Confederation Bridge and PEI, and he's going to the Calgary Zoo with Jan Arden. Whenever he teams up with Jan Arden, they're actually really funny together, so I am looking forward to that.
Now, what this means, and I kind of look forward to it, is the idea that if he's going to free himself up from this show, I'm guessing he's going to essentially get carte blanche from CBC to do whatever the hell he wants.
Yes, and I hope that doesn't mean a New Year's Eve special.
Right. Well, his Talking with Americans, or whatever it was called... Was they were a couple of great
they
specials
were.
That he did, so I kind of enjoyed those. So, well, congratulations. The fact that he's going out on his own terms is fantastic. So, Sounds good to me. We also have, instead of a show ending, we got a renewal, a early, I would say it's an early renewal, wouldn't you say, for Private Eyes?
Yeah, yeah. Global announced that there's going to be a third season of Private Eyes. That really wasn't a surprise because it's done so well in the ratings for Global and for Corus. But yeah, the interesting thing was that they're announcing it now. Now, they're heading into production, so that's why they're doing it. But the weird thing is what they did with season two. Season two is 18 episodes, and this third season is going to be 12 episodes. And what they did with the 18-episode second season is they split it up into two nine-season halves. So we've already seen the first nine episodes. The next nine episodes are going to be next spring and summer. So then that means that season three isn't going to be until 2019? If I'm getting my years right. So that's a long time to be going with the show. And I feel like I have, you know, nobody's told me anything. I feel like maybe that'll be the final season of the show. Although they do make a point of saying that Private Eyes airs in more than 110 territories globally. So that may keep the thing going. But I do have to wonder whether the third season will be its last, especially because it's a shorter episode order. I don't know.
Well, and it could just be also that, you know, Jason Priestley seems like, you know, he seems like after a few seasons on this or a few seasons on that, like he's ready to move on.
Well, when he's not starring in Private Eyes, he's directing all the time. So it's not like, you know, it's not like he's bored and isn't doing anything. He keeps himself busy.
Sure. Also news from Crave TV. Now, this very much falls into the model that is being perpetuated by Netflix now. So on Netflix, almost every week, if you're a subscriber, you notice there's an update which says we have a new stand-up comedy special. They are literally putting out, I would say, between 40 and 50 stand-up comedy specials a year now. I know a lot of people in stand-up comedy world are saying that in the long run, that's horrible because you're oversaturating the market. And you're actually taking a lot of content away from stand-up comics who won't be able to tour with that content anymore. But I remember the days when, you know, you used to have stand-up comedians that used to be able to keep their acts for like 4 and 5 years. Now the standard practice is that people are writing new specials every year and writing new content every year. I think George Carlin, when the HBO specials first came in back in the late 70s and early 80s, he was really the first stand-up comedian to say, I need to write an entire new hour every single year. Because I'm going to have a special, and then I can't do that stuff again.
No, yeah, you're right. I mean, with the advent of YouTube and everything, it's really made it's really impacted on stand-up performances, that's for sure.
So Crave is going to do three original stand-up specials, which, to be honest with you, we're not talking about a lot of budget here. I mean, you can do a stand-up special on the cheap if you really want to. If you got three cameras and some good mics, you're good to go.
Yeah, yeah, kind of like a podcast, right?
I mean, like really, I mean, you need, if you're setting up, you got your wide angle, your close up, you got your obligatory shot of the audience every now and then that you cut to. Some of those Comedy Now ones that they used to do, they made horrible audience cuts. Like, you know, they'd cut to the audience who were obviously laughing at a completely different joke. You know, the timing was way off. But so, I mean, I hope, don't get me wrong, I hope they do a good job on it. It's funny how comedians, because they watch, I guess, so, like, I listen to a lot of podcasts, which stand-up comedians do, and when they talk about their stand-up specials, there is a hyper-focus on, you know, how to come into the special and how to leave the special, and they're now talking about the artsiness of the cuts to the audience and all that stuff. Like, people are getting hyper-analytical because we've seen so many of them. It's funny that when you have so much access to stand-up comedy specials, you actually start to notice the tech side of stand-up comedy.
Yeah, especially when there will be some jarring skit that they do before it even leads into them coming out onto the stage. You're like, what's going on?
Yeah. And I mean, it used to be very common for, like, you would have, you know, the warm-up comedian be out there and do a big introduction. And I remember it was about 4 or 5 years ago when Louis C.K. kind of, you know, broke out huge, where his comedy special just started with him, like, walking out on stage. Like, no introduction, no nothing. He just walks out on stage. And I think more and more people are doing that now. It's just like, you know, we don't need the pomp and circumstance. It's just like, it's stand-up comedy. You know, you're obviously there to see the person that you're there to see, and that's it.
So the three specials, they're filming them at the Berkeley Church here in Toronto, and I'm assuming that must be an intimate setting. And of course, you know, you'll be able to get the lighting just right and the camera angles just right. So Deborah DiGiovanni, Darcy Michael, and Graham Chittenden are the three that are going to be featured in this stand-up comedy collection for Crave TV. Deborah, she's a long-time veteran comic, and Darcy Michael, I know because I saw him on the two seasons of Spun Out, and Graham Chittenden is a writer that I know from like Mr. D. Like, he's been in the business behind the scenes as a writer. I think he also worked on a season of Still Standing with Johnny Harris. So yeah, they're all well established in the stand-up community, that's for sure.
It was funny because I know I'm branching off here, but it was just recently on Mark Maron's podcast, the WTF podcast, that he interviewed Mike McDonald.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it was a really kind of, because Mike McDonald's kind of been out of the picture. Like in the 80s and 90s, he was the Canadian.
He really was, comedian. But he's been sick off and on.
Yeah, yeah, and so he tells that entire story. So if you go to the WTF pod, we're recommending another podcast, and you go back about maybe 7 or 8 episodes, maybe 8 to 10 episodes, you can find an episode with him, and it just talks about all the shit that he went through, and it's really good. It was an interesting, because I have to imagine that not tons of people in the States. He certainly never broke huge in the States. People knew him. But it was nice to hear kind of his story on such a, I mean, WTF podcast is one of the most popular podcasts in the world.
You're right. Yeah. Like when I thought stand-up comedy in Canada, it was him and it was Ron James. And I think that was kind of it at that time period when they were hot.
Yeah, for a lot of it, for sure. I mean, this is kind of like, the generation after, like in the 70s, you had a couple people as well. You had people like John Biner and stuff like that who were like doing their thing. So it sounds like they were already taped. So I guess they're doing Just for Laughs 42 now. Probably right around now. And it just says that over the past 2 days, they've actually taped these specials. So, which makes you wonder, why the hell can't they just tape everything that day?
Well, yeah. And I guess it depends on the Canadians that they've got there too, right? Because JFL, like, I don't know, I don't go all the time, although I did moderate a panel on this past Saturday for the Beaverton and down at the Second City, which was pretty exciting. And that's actually the first time that I've ever been to JFL, and it was a lot of fun.
Okay. Yeah, should be. There you go. So the last story, Bell. So we all know that all of the Canadian broadcasters are obliged to create their own funds or create their own funding for Canadian programming. And from what I remember, Greg, and correct me if I'm wrong, in theory, this funding is supposed to be open to almost anybody.
Yes, it is. And I like how you mentioned the fact that they're being told to do this from the CRTC, because, of course, when the press release goes out, it doesn't say that we're being mandated to do this. They make it sound as though we've been doing this all along and we'll just continue to be doing it.
Yes. Our magnanimous Bell Fund that we're giving to people in order to create Canadian television. Yeah. So they're celebrating their 20th anniversary of investing in the Canadian media production industry. That emphasis was for air quotes, by the way. emphasis of air quotes. So they're asking, I guess, is this proposals that they're asking for, or they're just actually launching these pilots?
They're looking for submissions. The deadline's November the 13th of 2017, and they're looking for short-form digital series for nonfiction that's going to cover factual, lifestyle, and documentary programming. And this is the first of 4 programs. And so they acknowledge in a quote that digital media has transformed and it's becoming this huge thing. And since 1997, they've invested over $200 million in 2,000 projects. So what they're looking for right now, they're providing a grant of up to $150,000 for original documentaries, lifestyle, and factual programming that have a maximum length of 15 minutes per episode, which actually is a little bit long from the people that I've spoken to in the digital space, and a minimum of 6 episodes. The producer now has more platform options, including a CRTC licensed Canadian broadcaster owned digital platform, hybrid VOD services, and digital platforms accessible to Canadians. So,
by the way, $200 million into 2,000 projects. Yeah, it's an average of $100,000.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Which, for a quote-unquote series, is not a lot of money. Especially when they've been doing this for 20 years, and now digital has even made it even cheaper than it has been in the past. In the past, it couldn't have been digital. Right. And it's still an average of $100,000. So I think, Greg, we should come up with our a lifestyle.
I think we should, because, you know, because like anybody that I talk to that has a web series, like, you know, they talk about applying for the funding and getting the funding and, you know, the hoops that you have to jump through. But it's such a good way to get into the industry. You know, if you it's hard to get into conventional television anyway.
I think we need to do a spinoff digital series called The Beverage Update.
All right. Yeah, well, all we need to do is go to bellfund.ca. You can get the information that you need there. The next deadlines are going to be February the 1st, 2018 for web docs. May 7th is the second deadline for short form digital series, fiction, comedy, and drama. And then blah, blah, blah. So as those deadlines and more information comes out, we'll let folks know about it, because I think a lot of our listeners are probably, you know, in the industry or looking to get into the industry, and this is definitely a way to do it.
Yeah. Put it this way, if you've, you know, in the past on this podcast, we've talked about web series and stuff like that. So if you've got something that you think could translate over into the Bell world and so that you can give them complete control over everything that you do, please feel free to do that.
Yeah.
Just saying.
No, cynical. Not you.
No, okay. That's good. Greg, that kind of wraps up all the stories for this week.
Yeah, not bad.
I thought the calendar would be actually a bit longer, but it's okay. I mean, there was one week that was a bit busy, and the other week not so much. And as we get into October, we will start to get into some busy stuff again. You know, by the time we come on with the next episode, we've got some stuff. And there's always a couple that get added to the calendar along
like
the way.
Like Flower Power.
Exactly, like Flower Power. Greg, where can people find you when you're not here talking about Canadian television?
You can find me running the website tva.com, and you can follow me on Twitter @TV_EH or my personal Twitter account @Greg_David. How about you, Anthony?
Find everything I do at AnthonyMarco.com. Find me on Twitter @AnthonyMarco. And Greg, why don't you tell people about last week's TV ABCs and next week's
TV
ABCs.
Oh my goodness, there you are, throwing me for a loop, having to come up with, having to remember the things that that I've got coming up. So last week's TVA was with John Mann, who is currently at the National Screen Institute's boot camp, where he and his friend, they developed a pilot called Wolfville. So now they're working with industry insiders, kind of like what they do at the Canadian Film Center, where they work on the whole, you know, putting the project together, and then it'll be pitched to networks and that type of thing. And then for next week, this is pretty exciting, actually. Not that they're not all exciting, but the next TV ABCs is going to be with Robert Lieberman. And if you don't know who Robert Lieberman is, he's actually an American director. He grew up in Buffalo, and since then has kind of, even though he's had some success in the U.S., he's had great success here in Canada. He's worked on shows like Gabriel's Fire with James Earl Jones. In most recent years, he's done The Expanse, Criminal Minds, Dexter, The X-Files, Brothers and Sisters, but he's also worked on Rogue, Haven, and he's currently working on The Expanse, and he's being given a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Directors Guild of Canada in October. So I had this great conversation with him, and I had he directed D.B. Sweeney in the... I gotta look it up, because when he told me, I had totally forgotten about this movie. It's the sci-fi movie with... Well, first of all, he did a Mighty Ducks movie, but he's best known for Fire in the...
He's best known for Fire in the Sky.
Do you remember that movie?
I do remember the movie. The alien abduction.
So the last three shows that he's done have all filmed in Canada: Private Eyes, Rogue, The Expanse. And he also directed episodes of Houdini and Doyle. Like I said before, Haven. He did an episode of Ascension, which was CBC's sci-fi series, as well as The Listener and Arctic Air.
Put it this way: one of his second television credits back in 1985, he actually played.
Yep.
He was a character in Spencer for Hire.
Yes.
That by itself, right there.
So it's the
Oh, sorry, he wasn't a character. D.B. I'm getting those all mixed up. I'm looking at D.B. Sweeney right now.
But
never mind.
I mean,
forget about that.
One of Robert Lieberman's first gigs was directing an episode of 30 something. So he talks all about kind of the length of his career, both here and in the U.S. It's a fascinating chat. So that'll be the one that runs next week.
Yeah. No, didn't. I wish he did. I wish he did Spencer for Hire.
Yeah.
Why didn't he do Spencer for Hire? Surely he has to have some old 70s, 80s television show. Yeah. Well, yeah, you said 30-something, so there you go. Oh, even better. He directed two ABC After School specials
indeed
in 1978. He did Fighting Back, the story of Rocky Blyer.
And he started out as a commercial director and then kind of fell into the TV business.
Yeah. I'm digging it right now. Going back to my heyday of retro television. I like it. Well, there you go, Greg. We've wrapped it all up. Happy hot fall.
Hashtag.
I guess that's what we're calling it. Hot autumn.
Geez.
Hot-um.
Hashtag hot-um. Love it.
Hashtag hot-um. Jeez. I don't know if the humidity is going to stop anytime soon. But anyway, folks, that wraps up another episode for this week. And now back to your regularly scheduled programming.